afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 13th of September 2016, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. Well, the weather is a little bit iffy here in the West Country. We've had rain at the start of the day and mist, but that's cleared and we've now got some blue sky, Mike. And
you must be wrong, Brian, because the government have put out a heat warning again for today.
Really?
Yes, because it's going to be 32 degrees across most of the country or something.
Okay.
We're all going to die due to the heat, heat exhaustion.
Okay. I'm not quite picking up that heat wave in our chat box, but presumably if the government's put out a warning, then you'd probably be keeping your children indoors, stopping them going to the playground.
Absolutely.
No doubt that'll be happening with Plymouth schools. Well, if you're of a weak disposition, please turn away now as we put a picture of our former Prime Minister on screen. And, of course, the big news is that he's decided to stand down and force an election in the Witney constituency. So betraying all of the Conservatives who worked very hard in order to get him in power. Whether they should have done that or not is another question, but he's now going to betray them. And the arrogance, what has this man got to say? As a former Prime Minister, it's very difficult to sit as a backbencher and not be an enormous diversion and distraction from what the government is doing. I don't want to be that distraction.
Maybe he's worried that people are going to laugh at him too much.
Well, maybe, Mike, but of course, there's nothing in David Cameron to say, I'm going to be in there dedicating myself to Britain and the British people and helping the country and making sure we get the NHS sorted out. No, I don't want to be a distraction. In any case, a backbencher doesn't really do anything. It's only the cabinet. Well, he's correct in that, of course. So what is the Telegraph article talking about? It's immediately discussing how much money David Cameron can now make on the circuit. He'll be picking up equivalent to Tony Blair, about £250,000 for a single talk. They quote Tony Blair as having now made about £100 million. And David Cameron is apparently hot on the trail to follow up that sort of money. Now, a few mischievous people have suggested that actually he stepped down as an MP because he's a little bit too close to the trouble over missing children and child abuse, particularly around the kids' company. So we look forward to further information about that. But I understand that David Cameron was handed a very important list of people who are suspected of being involved in the abuse of children. What did he do with that list? I don't know. But maybe he feels it time to gently ease out of the political scene. Well, here is the great hypocrisy from the gentleman. Let's bring it in. I hope I'll continue to contribute in terms of public service and, of course, contribute to this country that I love so much. But this is the very same man who actually pledged his support to Israel, not to Britain. And this is something that I don't think David Cameron should be allowed to forget. He said that his commitment to Israel was unshakable, not his commitment to Britain and the British people. His commitment to Israel was unshakable. And yet here he is now going to suck in the money. And he's telling us, well, of course, my commitment is to the British. Well, we're going to say sorry to the Scots, really, because this appeared in the press a while ago. But we'll bring it up. Where might Mr. Cameron go? Well, surprisingly, he might go to the Aberdeen area, Tillybrony Estate, currently owned by aristocratic barrister Philip Astor. Just happens to be part of the Anglo-American Astor family with ties to the Prime Minister's wife and just less than 20 miles from Balmoral. So an area of the country, of course, steeped in problems with children mainly. Mr. Cameron seems to be possibly going to move into I think it's 15,000 acre estate, modest little estate, Mike.
It's hard for some, isn't it?
It is hard for some.
You don't know how they get by.
Don't know how he'll get by, but my goodness, he deserves it after he's all he's done for Britain.
Yes.
We wish you well, Mr. Cameron.
Well, of course, one thing he isn't going to have to worry about is the constituency boundary review. This is being run by four boundary commissions. This is the boundary commission for England on screen at the moment. And the boundary commission for England has just published their draft proposals for England and Wales. Northern Irish proposals were published on the 6th of September. And the 20th of October is when we can expect the Scottish proposals. And the government saying that the idea of equal-sized constituencies giving each voter an equal share in our democracy was first proposed by the Chartists, whose People's Charter of 1838 called for such a measure to be introduced as an essential cornerstone of democracy. Nearly 180 years later, this boundary change will help correct the historic injustice of unequal representation. And they go on to quote various constituencies with different numbers of voters, and therefore, of course, each voter doesn't get quite the same piece of their MP as other voters do, and therefore the boundaries have got to be changed. But, you know, Brian, it does seem a bit strange because people are moving in and out of constituencies all the time, so the numbers do change. But actually, what seems to be generally happening is that, of course, people are moving into constituencies because we've got huge levels of immigration at the moment. But it seems like an ever-moving target. So how long is this boundary change going to last for?
Well, however long it lasts for, Mike, there will be another one, because the agenda, as I see it, is complete disruption. People live in areas. They know their areas. They know which parts of those areas make sense. And we've seen it here in the local Plymouth area, the Devon area, that we've now got boundary changes for local parish councils, for example, where the government has just decided to blob together areas that have no normal relationship. And of course, what this does is it confuses people. It means that the representatives who pop up are not local people that understand the local issues. So I think this is a part of deliberate breakup of historical boundaries. It's disturbing society, and I would say that this is a key part of big society coming in here.
Absolutely, and of course, what it seems to be doing is skewing things towards the Tory party, because of course it's the Labour Party that's going to be bearing the brunt of the constituencies that are being abolished. The other boundaries are changing. Now, of course, surprise, surprise, Jeremy Corbyn's constituency is one of the ones which is going to be abolished.
Just a coincidence.
Just a coincidence that what the Labour Party are saying is that their rules say that if a new constituency contains 40% or more of the voters from a previous constituency, then the current incumbent would get the opportunity to seek selection. So what they're basically saying is that if MPs vote for these boundary changes come the next general election, Jeremy Corbyn may be in the position of being the leader of his party and having to ask to be selected for another seat. It's an interesting situation.
Coincidence.
Just coincidence.
Total coincidence. And we probably should add that I think it's a local councillor has decided he might put his hat in the ring against David Cameron. And the particular gentleman, I'm sorry, his name escapes me now, but he was unhappy with some of David Cameron's cuts. So maybe there's a bit of retribution coming back to the Conservative Party. We would just like to say, remember, of course, that the Witney constituency, along with the Conservative councillors in Oxford County Council, were all informed of the abuse of children at Oxford and Cherwell Valley College. And there was not one single email or letter of concern or offer of help from any of the Tories in that area. So what we've witnessed yet again is when children are abused, do not expect any help from any MP or any Conservative-run establishment. And, of course, the whole of that abuse was covered up between Thames Valley Police and the local authorities. And indeed, parts of the educational system, including Ofsted. Interesting.
Yes. Well, of course, the changing of boundaries, constitutional change related. Here's another example. We've been talking about this quite a bit over the last few months. The Global Parliament of Mayors held their inaugural meeting. It finished on Sunday. and 60 mayors representing cities from all over the world. They founded the Global Parliament of Mayors, and they had a two-day conference, which concluded, as I say, on Sunday. The new platform, they say, will enable cities to further their cooperation in addressing global challenges. For this inaugural meeting, mayors discussed action-oriented plans concerning climate change, migration, and governance. Here's an example, one of their plenary sessions, the city and the interdependent world. And of course, this is the key point that we're trying to make with regard to constitutional change and also governance changes that are going on globally at the moment, because the relationship is being changed, not just in the United Kingdom, between the relationship between the individual and the nation. And interdependence is a very key part of this. I want to sort of draw people's attention to the article on the UK Column website once again, the Global Parliament of Mayors and the Abolition of the Electorate. And if you haven't read that, please do read it. What they are arguing for is a planet ruled by cities, which represents a new paradigm of global governance, of democratic localism, as they're calling it, rather than top-down imposition, of horizontalism rather than hierarchy, of pragmatic interdependence rather than outworn ideologies of national independence. So national independence is an outworn ideology, Brian. Foundations for this new world are being erected in our own age as cities collaborate and citizens communicate across borders with increasing ease and frequency. What remains is to sense the liberating possibilities of these developments. And in a question and answer session, the Global Parliament of Mayors were asked, in a world of nation states and supranational entities like the EU, will cities have the resources and jurisdictional authority to undertake the difficult work of global governance? And the answer was, one of the most important aims of the Global Parliament of Mayors is to develop a right of the city platform to secure the resources and jurisdictional autonomy necessary to discharge local and global responsibilities. And they were then asked, can the Global Parliament of Mayors really be a world government with a command and control architecture? And the answer was, no, it cannot. It should not aspire to be that. It should be bottom-up, soft governance institution that works through influencing other levels of governance and the civic and private sector with sound policies and effective solutions. Global public opinion must also be its target. So the key point here is that this is a big society on a global basis. Yeah. This is about what appears to be local control. We were talking about this yesterday, but in fact is centralized control at the local level. It's also participatory democracy in the sense that individuals do not get the opportunity to participate. Bodies like the Global Parliament of Mayors, like third sector organizations, like other charities, NGOs, they get the opportunity to set policy, to advise on policy, and to make their opinions known, but the individual doesn't. And just to end this section, just highlight this this quote from the Mayor of The Hague, who, of course, is one of the people instrumental in setting up the Global Parliament of Mayors. And he said, the Global Parliament of Mayors will deploy collective urban political power, manifesting the right of cities to govern themselves, as well as the responsibility to enact viable cross-border solutions to global challenges. In this era of interdependence, where nation-states are increasingly dysfunctional, and cities are everywhere rising, the moment has come for cities to take the leap from effective local governance to true global governance. This is what we're looking at.
It is big society by stealth. And of course, there was information out straight out of the Conservative Party and Labour saying that they were following the Saul Alinsky policy in creating communitarianism. So this is what we've started to see coming through. It's sold as giving power to people at a local level. But as Mike has just said, clearly what's coming in is tighter and tighter centralised control. And what an irony that it takes Russia today to come up with an article which is warning us about what's really going on. So here's David Davis and the headline, Open Democracy. Brexit negotiations may be kept so secret, not even Parliament will be told. Before we comment a bit further, it takes Russia to point out the hypocrisy and the dangers of democracy, in inverted commas, Theresa May style. But this is really, I think, it might be arrogance that British public don't don't you worry your little heads about Brexit. We, the MPs, doesn't matter whether we're on coke or doing something with children, we are the ones that are going to arrange your future. And it's going to be common purpose style behind closed doors. You don't need to know. Trust us. And then presumably the trap will be sprung when the words come outside the closed doors.
So this is exactly the trap of TTIP and TPP, and that caused quite a furore, not only in the public, but also in the media and from some politicians. Will we get any such reaction on this one?
I don't know what to say, really, but we've just come back onto that point. Russia today is the one that actually points out to us exactly what is going on. Absolutely fascinating. And we'll add in, what's the EU doing? Well, this man takes the biscuit, Jean Asselborn, the foreign minister from Luxembourg, and he's been getting very excited with Hungary. You note the fist there. Anyone like Hungary who builds fences against refugees from war, who violates press freedom and judicial independence, should be excluded temporarily or, if necessary, forever from the EU. But isn't that the EU itself, Mike? That we create the wars, or the EU has helped create the wars. It's made the people move. It's encouraged the migration. It's broken down the societies. And then they turn around to somebody who said, we've had enough of this madness, and you're an ogre, a disgraceful person, and we can't have you in the EU. Mm. The hypocrisy is just breathtaking. But I think it's worse than that, isn't it? This is people living their own reality. I'm just going to label that one breathtaking hypocrisy, though, and we'll move on. Well, Hillary Clinton, we've mentioned a couple of times, has been reported as being ill. And a couple of hours ago, the BBC finally seemed to start talking about it. So Hillary Clinton, according to the BBC, has got pneumonia. That's not what's being reported widely across the internet. But here is a picture of her. She would have actually collapsed onto the pavement if her security men had not taken hold of her.
Well, don't forget what appeared to be her nurse as well, by the way. She seems to be running around with a permanent nurse on.
Yeah. Well, I just add this little subheadline, fit for presidency, Hillary staggers towards the White House. But she says, don't worry, because when I got in this vehicle and I sat down and I could catch my breath, and I had a drink of water, and I cooled down, I felt much better quite quickly. So clearly, this is the woman to put in control of the United States. We'll loosely say the most powerful country in the world. She's coughing for protracted periods of time, so she can't deliver speeches. She's unsteady on her feet. She's got tics, I think is the correct terminology. And now she's collapsing, or nearly collapsing, on the pavement. But don't worry, elect me for president of the United States. I wonder what Russia and China are making of a geriatric Hillary Clinton in position.
Well, it's interesting that the mainstream media are starting to ask the question, can she be replaced even at this late stage? So obviously some concern beginning to grow in mainstream circles.
So they've covered it up and covered it up, but now finally they've been forced to report it.
Correct.
And that is due to the success, of course, of all those people who are reporting accurately over the internet.
Okay, Syria. Well, the Syrian Defense Ministry this morning announced they'd shot down two Israeli aircraft today. One, an F-16, and another, a drone. They said that the Israeli attack came in support of armed terrorists in the Golan Heights. Of course, this is what Israel has been doing. We've been covering this quite a bit over the last number of months. They've been providing hospital services. Syrian Air Defense Forces responded and shot down an F-16 fighter in the southwest and an Israeli drone over the Damascus area of Sassa. Syrian general said that the Israeli Air Forces have attacked Syrian army positions in support of armed terrorist groups. The enemies give logistical and moral support to the terrorist groups. They opened Israeli hospitals and medical centers for the injured terrorists after the Syrian army carried out operations against militants. Terrorists constantly receive military support from the Israeli armed forces via artillery fire and air attacks on Syrian army positions, is what the Syrian government position was. The Independent this morning reported that Israel has denied claims that these aircraft were shot down. Vanessa Bailey, I was speaking to this morning, she says Israel has a history of denying this type of these types of military losses, downplaying defeats. And her point was, of course, that this Israeli attack after the ceasefire is supposed to have begun was really designed to give moral support to ISIS, al-Nusra, these types of people. So the question is whether or not these aircraft were shot down. The Israelis are not denying that they were there. So what were they doing there at this particular moment when there's supposed to be a ceasefire in the country?
Was Israel trying to destabilise that ceasefire, Mike, in order to push forward their particular foreign policy?
Absolutely, exactly.
OK, well, for British forces to be in Syria, of course, we have to have total breakdown of the rule of law in UK. So I'm just going to remind people that at Glastonbury on the 15th of September, Justin Walker and others are going to be talking about reasserting the rule of law in UK. And this is the start of a critical period for this country, because it is becoming so obvious that the rule of law has ceased to exist. We're going to be coming on to a few issues in a moment. But wherever you are, of course, if you live in Britain today, we are not going to be a true democracy or a peaceful and lawful country unless there is a proper system of law involving common law and trial by jury. And these are all things at the moment which we can see alongside issues such as boundary changes are all being swept under the carpet. Well, let's have a look at why we need law. And we'll bring in Keith Vaz. And the headline here from the Mail: Keith Vaz, who paid male escorts for sex, was given a pass that allowed him unrestricted access to the House of Lords. So my question is here, who is actually carrying out the security checks on these people? A picture of the chauffeur top left on a beach in Goa. And this is of interest to many people who are following the child trafficking, child abuse links around Westminster, because it's one of the areas heavily implicated. We're not saying that the chauffeur was up to anything untoward in that direction. We're simply pointing out he happened to be in that location and proudly displaying a portcullis from Westminster on his shopping bag. So our question is, who is responsible for doing the security clearance on the likes of Mr. Vaz, and the fact that he can simply allow his chauffeur to wander into what should be relatively high security areas as if he's on a little shopping trip? Well, let's bring in Andrew Parker. This is the man, the boss of MI5. This is what he says on the website. At any one time, the UK faces a range of covert threats to its security, and MI5 has only finite resources with which to counter them. We prioritise the threats and allocate resources accordingly, taking into account the national intelligence priorities set by the Joint Intelligence Committee. So he's obviously a man with great responsibility, but clearly he has got the responsibility of the safety of this country. And of course, safety of government has got to be a prime consideration. But it would appear that Mr. Parker simply doesn't know what's going on in Westminster. Right, let's just have a look at this. This is from the website. You can go and see this yourself, because he says exactly what they're doing. He says that he's personally responsible for the operations and efficiency of MI5. Therefore, he's personally responsible for security around Westminster. He makes an annual report. He says they've got to be politically impartial. Well, we would question that. And they obtain and disclose information lawfully. And he says a few other things as well. But there we are. So this is the man who is supposed to be keeping us safe. But if we take a little more of an in-depth look at the MI5 website, we find that the latest news is nothing to do with how they're protecting the public from corruption in Westminster. They're boasting that they're in the top 50 employers of women. So it's good to see that in news and speeches, MI5 is concentrating on the real issues. Well, what's the problem with MI5? Well, we would say that they're a little bit too cozy with the very people they're supposed to be keeping an eye on. So here's the MI5 organisation, the Director General, Andrew Parker, very much at the top of the tree. But in comes the statutory authority, as it's called, from Home Secretary Amber Rudd. So he's independent, but basically he takes that authority from Amber Rudd, the Home Secretary. And of course, she's now very much in the clutches of former Home Secretary, now Prime Minister, Theresa May. A couple of little devil's horns came up there. I don't know if you noticed that, subliminal, only joking. And they are short of money because MI5 has to scrape by with a share of the 2 billion single intelligence account, which it shares with MI6, Special Intelligence Services, and GCHQ. So they've got 4,000 staff. They've got shares in a £2 billion funding pot. But we've concluded this, that they haven't yet worked out that China's a hostile communist country. I'll come on to that in a minute. They're not quite sure there are any child abusers operating in Westminster. They weren't very sure whether there were abusers in the King Cora Boys Home in Northern Ireland. And they're not too sure as to whether drugs are being used in Westminster, or indeed that MPs are using rent boys, such as Mr. Vaz. Well, we don't know the age of the boys, but we know they were quite young.
Can I just clarify something?
What's that, Mike?
MI5, MI6 and GCHQ, which are there tasked to protect the nation from terrorism and all kinds of other
stuff.
They've got a £2 billion budget.
Yes.
What's the budget of the BBC?
The BBC, that's a very good question. 3.65 billion. Yes, absolutely.
So the BBC gets double the money. I find that incredible.
Well, if we remember that BBC monitoring provides services, of course, for GCHQ.
GCHQ has to pay for those, though.
Perhaps. Right, so we're laughing, but this is a deadly serious subject. We are being told that our security services are so incompetent under Mr. Andrew Parker that they're completely unaware of drugs being used in Westminster, all the criminal element, all the child abusers, all the rent boys. And why should they be so reticent about doing their job? Well, let's bring on this, which we've shown before. This is the UK column map of the state-sponsored cover-up of child abuse. Of course, we're now on to the fourth chairman in England. We've seen interference with the chair of the inquiry in Scotland. We've seen the cover-up of abuse in Northern Ireland, especially around the King Cora Boys Home. And if you follow it through with the lost evidence and indeed security services personnel saying, well, we didn't do anything because we were worried it might damage the reputation of the government. Keep buggering the little boys, but we were worried we might damage the reputation of government. Well, let's keep Mr. Parker in the spotlight. So let's bring in another diagram. This is going back in time a bit because, of course, we've got William Hague in as Foreign Secretary there. Make sure we know where Mr. Parker is. He's at the centre of this little
nest.
Thank you, Mike. So who have we got? Well, of course, we had at the time Malcolm Rifkin, the very chairman of the Intelligence and Security Committee, which Mr. Parker said, don't worry, because we're under the control of the Intelligence and Security Committee. But Mr. Rifkin was doing deals or was prepared to do deals with dodgy Chinese companies. So he ultimately lost his position. Then we've got Marxist-based charity Common Purpose, which we have proven several times has been penetrated by child abusers. But this organisation is now being used to train our top civil servants. They're unaware of this, Mike. Yep. They simply don't know this is going on. And then let's bring in your favourite, Brooks Newmark. This is the Tory MP who was mixing with General Idris and boasting that the Free Syrian Army were linked to the terrorist group al-Nusra. These are the bad terrorists. They're not the good terrorists. These are the bad terrorists. But apparently MI5 had no idea what Mr. Newmark was up to, and they didn't even know that he was sending pictures of himself over the internet. Now, what we're talking about here is either malfeasance or incompetence in public office. But of course, the danger to the country is blackmail of these people so that foreign powers can control British politicians to do their own criminal bidding, or even the bidding of a foreign power. Well, let's bring in Mr. Rifkin again, because if anybody thinks that UK column is making it up, this was a headline from The Telegraph. Jack Straw and Sir Malcolm Rifkin did offer cash for access. That was to a fictitious Chinese company. But my point is they were prepared to do a dirty deal with a Chinese, communist Chinese company. Well, Mr. Rifkin has popped up again in the last couple of days, because he's warning the security services about doing anything with Chinese companies.
That's strange.
It's strange, that, isn't it? So he's doing deals with communist Chinese companies, and he was prepared to do that for money behind closed doors. He gets sacked as head of the intelligence committee, and then he's the one picked by the Telegraph to warn us that we shouldn't do any deals with Chinese companies. Is this La La Land, Mike, or is something more sinister going on? Well, no doubt MI5 is going to help solve the problem. So what has Andrew Parker got to say? Well, hold tight here, because he's got some words of wisdom. What does he say? He says this: the rule of law is paramount. So there we go. Andrew Parker is the man saying we must make sure law works. Except, of course, if it involves the establishment and MPs. And I couldn't resist this because it was a tweet from Dennis Skinner. And the cartoon is probably a little bit small, but George Osborne is saying to Mr. Vaz, you should have gone for Diet Coke. And so we've got drugs being used in Parliament. The politicians know, but apparently MI5 with a share of $2 billion doesn't, Mike.
The rule of law is paramount.
The rule of law is paramount. Now, if you've been with us for that report, I'm going to say now, I'll say again at the end of today's news, tackle MI5. Let's bring Mr. Parker into the full glare of the public spotlight. Let's get the letters and emails going to the head of MI5, simply asking what he is doing for his money. Well, a change of subject, but not. As I drove up a road fairly close to the UK column studio yesterday, I passed this appalling hoarding. And, words almost fail me. I've entitled it Child Harvesting. So it's puppies for sale, Mike.
Yes, adopting a child won't change the world, but for that child, their world will change forever, quite possibly, bearing in mind what we know about the trade in children that's going on in this country.
Well, the report that I had yesterday from a very knowledgeable man in the Midlands is that each child is now worth £70,000. That's the basis. The basic level for how much money will change hands the moment a child is taken away from their parents. And then on top of that can be the very big money if that child is then trafficked into films or abuse or the child sex trade. But how much money is made as a base level? He says £70,000 per child. And interestingly, if that gentleman is in the Midlands, we're receiving similar information from people in Scotland. So do have a look at this charity. Of course, I'm not saying they've done anything wrong. I'm just saying that I personally find their advertising campaign offensive. But if you do go to the website, you'll see more pictures of lovely little girls. And they're boasting that we can trust them because they used to be a Church of England and a Catholic Church charity to look after children.
Two organisations that have the best reputations in this area.
Yes, it says Families for Children existed for many years as a joint venture operated by the Exeter Diocesan Board for Christian Care and Plymouth Diocesan Catholic Children's Society. In 2003, the agency became a separate charity in its own right. We just remind people that it was the Church of England, of course, that lied and covered up for years and years and years over the vile abuse of girls in the Kendall House home in Kent. And if you haven't read Teresa Cooper's book detailing exactly what went on, girls drugged unconscious for days and abused. And of course, many of those women, as they are now, are suffering suffering physical health problems as a result of the huge amounts of drugs they were given. And yet the Church of England has spent years covering up and putting up a wall of silence to make sure that those who suffered don't get any proper compensation. Nice stuff.
Yes, okay, well, we'll end on some financial news then. So the Bank of England has published a press release today on a new quantitative easing. They're catching up with what the European Central Bank has announced already, and they're going to start buying corporate bonds as well as government bonds. Beginning on the 27th of September, they're going to start an initial period of 18 months, and each week they're going to hold a reverse auction to buy some corporate bonds. They're going to buy bonds in companies like Apple, for example. Any company that is perceived to be that's of a certain size and producing a certain issuing a certain number of bonds each month, they are going to buy those. £10 billion is the level that they're going to maintain. It might go be a bit higher or a bit lower than that, depending on what part of the year it is and so on. Well, there's been some criticism about this because obviously Apple is on that list. Apple's still sort of being vilified for their tax arrangements because, of course, Apple on one hand says that they do no business in Britain, make no profit in Britain, and therefore don't need to pay any tax in Britain. Bank of England seems to have a different view because Apple is considered a big enough company and an important enough company to the British economy to be one of the companies on the list. But anyway, we're now starting to buy corporate bonds as well as government bonds in order to inject funny money into the economy.
Can I ask where the Bank of England money comes from, Mike?
Well, they print it. They don't literally print it. They put some press a button on a computer.
Right.
To buy these bonds.
And the companies are owned by the backing banks?
No, well, the companies, these will generally be PLCs, so they'll be publicly listed with shareholders.
Right.
But, of course, once the Bank of England owns the company's debt, then they may have some influence as well. So anyway, this is an interesting little, it's just a little story. This is ING. Apparently their main data center was shut down because, they were experimenting with their new fire extinguishing system in their data center. And it didn't quite go so well because they passed wind basically, because the way that these fire extinguishing systems generally work is that they put an inert gas into the room, which extinguishes the fire. So as they were pumping that gas out, it sort of made a bit of a farting noise, and apparently this was 130 decibels, and this caused some of the hard disks in their systems to crash, which meant that people couldn't withdraw money from the cash machine.
Right.
It's such a load of nonsense, Brian. So, I mean, the event in the data center may well have happened, but for them to suggest that this was the cause of people not being able to withdraw money from cash machines is ridiculous. This is another incidence of an IT systems failure being blamed for the fact that the bank aren't willing to give people cash. We've seen this happening. I think RBS began this trend and various other banks have jumped on this bandwagon. This is another example of it, I think.
Yeah.
And a piece of good news to end on, because Ms. Lagarde is going to stand trial. She had an appeal in France's highest appeals court to try to avoid being placed on trial over her role in a 400 million euro scandal. Fraud, I think, is the better word for it. And so she's going to stand trial in the Cour de Justice de la République. 15,000 euro fine, up to a year in prison if she is found guilty. So we live in hope.
Up to you. How much was the money she was dealing with?
400 million euros.
400 million euros, and you get up to a year. I think you get up to a year for sort of stealing a couple of grand from the local authority.
Yes, but if you're head of the IMF, then
you get special treatment.
Well, you're dealing with bigger money. It's, you know, when you're dealing with billions, 400 million, it's not important.
No.
No.
We're smiling, but it's because we don't know what to say. It is becoming obvious that the rule of law is completely broken down in UK, certainly broken down in Europe, because we've got a European Union fiefdom simply being run by a criminal elite. Still no signed off audited accounts after 19 years, I think it is. It may be more. Somebody will correct me. But of course, it's treason for the British government to give any money to an overseas power that can't account for that money. But we don't worry about that. And I suspect people will go away from today's news wishing Mr. Cameron well and hoping that he does get his foot in the door of that £20 million Scottish estate, because he deserves it. Well, I am going to remind you of the Glastonbury event on the 15th of September. If you get an opportunity, we'd love you to go. We're also looking for support for the British Constitution Group event in November the 19th. And it is important for people to do things. And one of the things that people say to us quite often is, well, is there any point in writing to MPs? Is there any point in sending these emails? Because all we get is fob-off replies. We say, yes, there's every point in writing the emails and the letters, because it places these people under great pressure, because they know that the public is watching them. And when you receive a fob-off letter, that is a wonderful piece of evidence that your MP, for example, is simply prepared to cover up and lie to the public. So that is your evidence for talking to local constituency people. And it's up to us to put these people under pressure. And how about it? MI5 sits there, apparently spying on all of us, looking after our safety. We think it's time the spotlight was put on the security services to ask them how they have a £2 billion budget, but they're unable to see illegal drugs used in Westminster. They're unable to see the child abuse taking place in Westminster and the other criminal activity going with it. So that's our challenge for today. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.